Longtime commentator and television host Keith Olbermann is a strong critic of President Trump. If we couldn't guess it from his tweets and online commentaries for GQ, the title of his new book gives it away. It's called Trump is Effing Crazy, This is Not a Joke. Olbermann questions Trump's sanity, speeches, opinions, and fitness to serve. But Olbermann didn't always feel that way about Trump, and he's with me to talk about that and more. So, Keith, when did you first meet Donald Trump, and what did you think of him then?
I was at a press conference that he gave as the owner of the New Jersey Generals in the long-forgotten United States Football League in 1984 when I was a reporter for CNN, and I was 25 years old and had a mustache and did sports, and nobody knew what CNN was. And I came out of it having done a one-on-one interview with him and was walking to the car in the Meadowlands, and I said to my producer, who is now the president of MSNBC, what the hell's wrong with this guy? And that was my impression of him. So then I worked in Los Angeles for a while and went to ESPN and didn't have a lot of interaction with him directly. And the next time I did, I was working at NBC, and he was there, and I used to see him in the hallways occasionally, and he would come over and say things that made no sense. I mean, I knew he was a good friend of Bill O'Reilly's, and he said, I watch your show every night, and it's like, no, I'm on against Bill O'Reilly, so you can't be doing that. This is sort of pre-TiVo era, pre-DVR era. And then I happened to buy an apartment in one of the buildings that has his name on it in the city of New York, and I saw him occasionally there, and he was extraordinarily solicitous in a way that reminded me of Eddie Haskell from Leave It to Beaver. And I just thought of him as kind of your standard issue BS salesman who may have been at the top of that field. And then, you know, one day he walked down came down the escalator in his building on Fifth Avenue and started to spout this hateful rhetoric about everybody. And I was beginning to wonder, gee, which is the real one?
And you went on Bill Maher's HBO program. You expected him to come down pretty hard on you. What ended up happening there?
As I went further and further into this, I realized that Bill would crush me because I said, you know, I thought originally this was just an Eddie Haskell guy, a mild kind of salesman who was just operating, and I was sort of taken in, and Bill was going to crush me and say, how could you be so stupid as to fall for that? And instead, Bill essentially said, golly, I felt the same way. He was one of the nicest people I ever met. And that's when I first thought, this is more than just a great salesman. This is a guy who is convincing enough in two different personas that this suggests it might be something more than just an act, that there are at least two different personalities working on here.
A lot of people lie. A lot of people tell falsehoods, white lies, whatever we want to say. Is he someone who you think believes, is he consistent enough to believe what he says, or does he just sort of like, sticks his finger in the wind and see where it goes, and then that's his opinion for the day?
I've worked for people who are cynical enough that the truth no longer has any relevance to them, and it's just expediency. So the answer is he could easily be functioning without any conviction that what he is saying is true. It's just true for the moment. And I will now use this very recent event of this unfortunate phone call with the family of one of the servicemen lost in Niger, in which he came back immediately saying, you know, I have proof that this conversation did not happen the way the congresswoman and the widow's mother said it did. And within an hour or two, the White House was denying it had any tape or any documentary evidence. And of course, he said the same thing about his conversations with James Comey. There's an extra dimension to this in which the truth becomes an option, and the fear of what he wishes were true becomes the primary weapon. In other words, what is the mental process by which you say, well, I have absolute proof that this didn't happen? Well, actually, I don't have any proof that this didn't happen, but I threatened you with it anyway. Why would you threaten yourself or threaten somebody else and then just further diminish your credibility in your own defense? It makes no sense whatsoever. So I don't know what he believes in terms of whether or not the viability of the individual statement is intended to last more than 5 minutes.
How much blame do you put on people who voted for him? I mean, have you tried to understand why they voted, or are you just thinking, God, why did you people vote for this guy?
I've just, having studied this only 7 days a week for the the last 2 years, and that's almost literally true. I'm just literally in the last week, week and a half, beginning to distill an understanding as to why his persona is so resonant with his supporters to the exclusion of, to my mind, reality, and to obvious impairments of some kind, whether it's a physical impairment, mental one, psychological, emotional, whatever it is. I no longer care what it is. I just believe it's there. But I finally think I've come close to it. The idea that he is talking directly, he, the TV star, the big man, the big billionaire, whatever he is talking directly to a viewer, a voter, a television watcher. I think that's the essence of it. In other words, they have, and you can see this, as much as we might mock his social media stuff, particularly the tweets, the people who believe in him and believe his stories that everything bad about him is a lie are getting information about somebody they think they know, somebody they think is their friend, somebody they think is personally interacting with them.
I would need to ask you one sports question related to Trump, which is, why did he pick a fight with the NFL, and why did he pick a fight with the NFL over Kaepernick and kneeling during the national anthem, that kind of thing?
There's two elements to it. The political one should be fairly obvious. It obviously is red meat to his base.
Mm-hmm.
So there are political aspects to it, but there's also a sports vendetta. He was the guy in the United States Football League who sued the National Football League and said, no, we're going to take them on head on. I don't want to play spring football, where they were developing a nice niche. I want to play against the NFL. We're going to sue the NFL. We're going to win. And they, of course, they won the lawsuit and were awarded $1 in damages, and the league went out of business. And then, not long ago, within the last 5 years, he was, I guess, the underbidder or the second underbidder when the Buffalo Bills were sold, and was very resentful about that. And once again, you look at it and you go, my God, why didn't we let him buy that team? Just let him occupy himself with ruining the National Football League rather than the country. There is literally something personal about it.
Keith Olbermann is host of GQ's web series, The Resistance, and he has a new book called Trump is Effing Crazy. Keith, my honor to talk with you. Thanks.
Thanks for the kind words. I appreciate it.